January was Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and joining me in the studio now is Bob Teeter. He's the director over at CISA Outreach Services. Marie Hickman is also here. She's a program manager. And let's start off first with a definition. Everybody's got an idea. I mean, I had an idea what I thought human trafficking was, and as we talked before we went on the air, it's kind of based off what Hollywood has portrayed it as. But give us a definition of human trafficking.
Yeah, and first of all, thanks for having us. This is a subject that we don't often think happens in our quaint little town of Florence, but unfortunately it does happen. And we have survivors, individuals who are trying to flee that environment, come to us every year. And so, you know, kind of the basic definition is, you know, it's there's human trafficking, there's sex trafficking. So, you know, and both involve some form of labor. And so it's a use of force or fraud or coercion in exchange for labor, which could be sexual acts, services, you know, or anything that it has to be tied to money. So, for example, they're being forced to do something, someone is benefiting from that financially.
See, I always looked at it in two different ways. I guess I never saw the whole picture because I always thought of human trafficking as, okay, we're taking a bunch of people from one area and we're going to take them to another for a purpose. But it can be more static than that, can it?
Correct.
It's like you mentioned, there is an exchange. It's almost like slavery. I mean, I guess that's another term for confinement and making someone do something that they normally wouldn't. Probably do.
And the term in trafficking is, you know, they may not be, you know, moved from place to place. You know, that's what you kind of see in the movies and TV where they have these, you know, groups that they kind of, you know, move them from town to town or relocate them. The services may be done at different locations rather than one central point, right? So if someone is forcing somebody to go perform sexual acts per se, they may be sending them to that customer's location, right? Not the customer coming there. And so that's kind of where the term, the trafficking kind of comes in. And Marie has been with our agency for about 14 years. And so she's been there longer than I have. And she is one of the more experts in the field in the state of Oregon. She's received a lot of training. Again, she's also seen a lot here locally. And I'm going to kind of defer to her with a little more of an expansion of what that definition is and what we see.
Okay, so first of all, it is not limited to a race. It is not limited to a culture. It is not limited to an age. We have seen human and labor trafficking from, like I said, birth to senior. It's whenever someone makes a profit off of what you are doing. And a lot of people don't understand that our teenagers are trafficked every day in Florence.
And it's also not gender biased either, right?
No.
I mean, it can be
no.
either gender as well.
Right.
It's all gender identities.
Obviously, the internet has a lot to do with the growth of this. But how are these individuals, is recruited a word for this? Or are they played upon because of their financial or home life situation?
I think it's both. I mean, social media has created a vessel for these predators to, you know, recruit, as you say. And they draw them in with the idea that they're going to make a lot of money doing this. And that it's because they're desired. You know, they prey upon people who may have self-esteem issues and convince them, hey, this is to give you value. And kind of hook them that way.
It also comes with a green card issue. You come from a different country, you have a green card, somebody else gains access to your green card, your documentation, they hold on to it. Now you will do what they say. You will sex traffic, you will labor traffic, you will do the slavery piece. We see a lot of people finding a bride on the internet, bringing them here and saying, you're going to have a wonderful life and I'm married to you. But the next thing you know, they're being forced to work. They're being forced to have sex. They are fearful to go to any kind of law enforcement because they may lose their ability to live in the United States, because that's what that person who is in charge, who has the power, the control, they intimidate you. And these people don't know they have any rights or protection.
Now, I imagine that there have been people who have gotten away from this and have been able to talk about it. Do these people not see that the life they came from is not necessarily any worse than the life they ended up with? Is that what keeps them?
Well, there's a little bit of brainwashing goes on. You know, you're conditioned to be convinced that you need to be dependent upon these people. You know, it's not unlike, you know, with domestic violence, why people don't leave their abusers, because of the fear of being unhoused or the fear of what could happen to them. You know, that's part of the power, right? They have power over them for a reason. They've convinced them that they can't make it without them. The other thing that makes it really hard for them to leave is there's a system. I mean, this is a very well thought out, you know, for lack of a better term, industry. They have people who are watching them 24/7. They're branded. They're controlled in some of the most unbelievable ways that we can't even fathom. They call them moms, or these ladies that will, you know, maybe follow them around and make sure they're not opening their mouth to someone. And that's one of the things that we've, you know, probably train on just about more than anything else, is those signs. Because a lot of the services that we have might be that conduit or that entry point for someone trying to get help. So, for example, if someone was needing prescription assistance, you know, they may come to us to get help with that. And the person that's accompanying them is a family member, a relative, when in fact it is someone that's the term is mom oftentimes, but
they are protecting their meal ticket, and that's the bottom line.
And making sure that they're not, you know, disclosing anything. You know, and then we're also looking for the markings. I mean, they're treated like cattle. They're branded, you know, they're property. And it's this is crazy, but they also brand them so that other sex trafficking industries may spot them and say, okay, that belongs to that group. I can't touch them, or I can't approach them. You know, it's just crazy, some of the stuff we see.
Now, you say group. Are these a lot of times just an individual that has an individual person that they are controlling, or is this several people in a group, or is it, you know, a whole network? How is this?
Yes. We see a lot of different forms. I mean, we've seen probably the most common one that we've seen is a family member using a teenager to pay their bills. So they may be forcing that teenager to go do sexual acts or labor acts in exchange for, you know, covering their rent. Or they may be, you know, they might have a drug issue and they're using that person, that family member, to pay for their drug addiction. You know, that's the one we commonly see around here. But then it takes other forms. We've seen very organized, large groups that have large numbers of people. They have pockets in different communities up and down the coast. you know, we just see all spectrums of it.
When I think about this, I think about, okay, it's obviously happening in Florence. You say you recognize some of the signs of that. What is the steps that can be taken to help to eliminate this? I mean, we're not a real big community. It ought to be easy to spot, you know, you would think.
Well, the people come to us in many different ways. Sometimes it's a coworker who says, Marie, their lifestyle is really weird. Can you talk to them? So we will find an excuse to have that person come in. We will identify what the problem is, and then we will give safety plans, solutions, connect them with legal services depending on what the need is. If it's immigration, you get immigration assistance. If it's just a housing assistance, then we're going to get you connected with housing help. If it's you really need to be removed from the area, we're going to ship you across country.
It's tricky. You know, in answer to your question about what can we do to prevent it, we can't. This is one of the oldest industries out there. It's not going to go away. There's no solutions for it. What our focus is going to be is how can we help people get out of that world? And it's tricky. I mean, because, you know, your lives are being threatened. We had a situation where a teenager was being trafficked, and they were told that if they disclosed to anybody, their parents would be murdered. And so they let it happen for years, right? So that's one of the things that we have to be very cautious about when we do see someone that comes in and they're using those certain buzzwords that we picked up, or they might slip us a note saying, help me. We're going to tread very carefully because we don't want to put that person's life in danger, because that, you know, like also domestic violence. Anytime someone tries to leave that abuser or that person controlling,
it could be deadly.
It could be deadly, right? So, and that's one of the things I want to caution people in the community that, you know, if they do see that, they know it's, don't just come right out and pull them away, because you could be, I mean, this is a very well thought out, it's a lot of money's at stake. They could be putting their lives in danger too. Just letting them know, hey, if you're ever having a hard time, there's a really cool agency. They're really confidential. They can't tell anybody anything that's going on, but they got a lot of great services. Here's their crisis line number. Or just say, you know, hey, someone cares, and, you know, things like that. You say, hey, I see you might be having a hard time. You know, you don't have to tell me the whole story, but, you know, there are people out there that can help. And just putting those little nuggets out there, and then hopefully if we get in contact with them, we can – very methodically get them to safety, get them out of that situation, you know, get them away from there.
Now, obviously, your system is confidential. But when someone comes out of that, when you're able to help someone out of that, is there a time when you can involve law enforcement to take the next step against the people who are,
if the client allows? That's all.
So it's up to the client.
It's up to the client now. And Maria is really good about going through and talking about, okay, here's your options. Okay, option A is this. This is the good and the bad that can happen with this. Option B is this. You good and the bad with this. So that we're trying to give that power back to them. Right. That's key. That's the key for them to be able to move on and be safe, to be convinced that they do have the power over their own lives. They've been convinced that they don't have that. So we're going to empower them. And we're going to, you know, say, hey, there's a lot of positives here that we can work. We're very fortunate. The Florence PD, Lane County Sheriff's Department, State Police. We are very, very fortunate to have a well-educated, thoughtful law enforcement agency. That's not the case in other parts of Oregon and even around the country. I was at a conference a number of years ago in Louisiana, and one of the things they said was that Oregon is ahead of the game on a lot of this stuff. And I spoke about the services and partnerships that we have with law enforcement, and I saw a lot of heads going, man, I wish we had that. I wish we had that ability. So we're very fortunate to have the partnership that we do with Florence PD.
Is it because of our size and the community that the police are involved in? Because I imagine some larger cities.
It has to do with leadership.
Does it?
It has to do with the leadership. I mean, and Tom Turner, who was a great supporter of ours, former board member, really did a lot to educate the staff here. And we actually go in a couple times a year and do a presentation and a little bit of a training with Florence PD and Lane County Sheriff's Department. And now we have also mobile crisis response. So mobile crisis may come across somebody and they know they know what to do when they come across those situations. And now with Commander Pitcher, or Chief Pitcher now, is continuing that. And so we haven't had that in the past. So it really comes down to leadership is why we have that partnership.
Marie, what are some of the other ways that people can get involved in helping? Obviously, like Bob was saying, you don't want to just go up and try to yank somebody out of something. And he gave a lot of the ideas of why you can contact these group in here. Are there any other ways that people can help or you know, lend a hand?
Listen. Offer resources. Be non-judgmental. If the person wants to go to the police, let them go to the police. If they just want to come to us, let them come to us. Don't force them. They have already had all their power taken away. And the number one thing is we want to give them power, self-confidence, self-worth back to them. So something else you can do is you can donate funds to help people be relocated. You can help with funding for clothing, for food. When these people leave their bad situation, they have only what is on their body with them.
Right. They very rarely get to grab anything that might belong to them, and they might not have anything that belongs right. to them.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that we're that there's funding now coming available is, you know, I talked about the branding. You know, to get that branding removed, right? Because, you know, once you have that on there, you know, down the road, you could be tracked down that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they literally put barcodes on people and other markings. So that's a really important piece to getting them safe and in some cases get their identity fully changed and have those markings removed.
I imagine the non-judgmental thing is very important because you have someone who may be weak or have a low self-esteem, and when you start judging them, then all of a sudden they're like, well, these people aren't any better than the ones I'm with. They don't see me as a human. They see me as, you know, a victim or something.
No. A lot of people feel that you see me lower than dirt. I am worth nothing. And so if you show them a little kindness, a little understanding, non-judgmental assistance, and teach them that they do have self-worth. Nobody has a perfect life. Nobody has been perfect. Everybody has made a mistake. And I'm not going to judge you. Please don't judge me. Okay, that's my number one thing to tell people. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to judge my mistakes in life. Why would I judge yours?
You mentioned that, you know, some of the ways that people are recruited through this. Are there, do traffickers stay away from people that like may have mental health issues or drug issues already because they don't, or is that more of a draw?
I think it's more of a draw because their self-esteem's already been kind of stripped away. You know, kind of going back to your earlier question, you know, another thing that could prevent some of this from happening is parenting. I work with youth, you know, through volunteer work and things like that in the school district, and also for nearly 20 years was in youth services. And it's amazing to me how much parents are allowing the internet to raise their kids. You know, they're handing kids at 5 years old a tablet that's connected to the internet, and walking away and not knowing who's talking to them, what they're being exposed to. You know, even the video games these days are highly sexualized. And they don't talk to their kids. It's their surrogate babysitter, is the internet. And parents need to be more involved in what they're seeing, what they're watching. I know there's parents are worried about privacy and things like that. What's more important to you, your kid being a little upset with you or your kid getting sucked into that trafficking industry?
And right? again, that's a two-edged sword too, because, right. you know, if you don't give your kid a tablet, then some people say, well, you're a bad parent because you're not giving them access to technology where they can learn this the new way. Then if you do give them, or, you know, then they're like, oh, you've given them too much access to.
Right. And potential. I'm not saying don't give them that stuff,
right.
but don't give it to them and just walk away from it. Right. Have those continual conversations. Ask what they're being looked at. I think, you know, me as a parent, what I did with my boys was, it was kind of a progressive thing. They had to earn that privilege, right? So we started out that we had to watch, you know, check their search history. And as they demonstrated, as they got older, they were being responsible. We backed off. And, you know, so that would kind of be my advice to parents is that, you know, at first, have those conversations, set up boundaries, set up rules, monitor what they're being exposed to, right? When you see them being exposed to things that are not healthy, have those conversations. Let them know why it's not healthy. We're letting, you know, these predators raise our kids, right? I mean, you can see kids more and more, younger and younger, are even dressing more sexualized and to where they think that that's their role. Their role is to provide those services. That's where they're getting their self-worth from. So in terms of prevention, that's the best thing that could happen is parents being more involved.
Well, what you just mentioned makes me think of how our culture is changing to where if you talk to someone about how they're dressing, you're almost like, well, I should be able to dress this way. You shouldn't look at me in that particular way. I should be able to dress like this. But in the same sense, they're sexualizing the way they dress. And if you say anything about it, you're almost blackballed for saying something about
right.
it. It's a weird place to be in. And again, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, as a parent, I of three kids, I mean, I wanted my kids to have some sense that there was hope, you
right.
know, in the future. And yet with all these things that are coming up, you really have to make them aware and beware of the dangers that are out there. It's right. really a hard balance.
It is hard. Yeah. Parenting's not easy. No. I mean, I totally
It never has been.
It never has been. You know. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things is maybe a source of encouragement for those parents, just with my own personal experience. I know there was a lot of times, you know, my boys who are now adults, you know, yeah, they were pretty mad at me and didn't understand. And now that they're adults and starting their own families, they're now saying, thank you. I get it now. I understand. And it is tough as a parent to go through that. But again, it's all about loving your kids.
And I think as a parent, we all have at one point or another, and as a kid, we all point one point or another have turned around and said, thank you, mom and dad,
right.
when they were a little tougher on us. Now,
right.
the parents that weren't tough on you, I don't know if they ever got a thank you
yeah.
for letting me do whatever I want. But I do see that. I do,
yeah.
and I do recognize that. And that's the hard part in being a parent is, and it's not a long period. It's only like maybe a 2-year period in their growth, you know,
right.
adolescence into teenage years where you really got to bear down. But if you do, the benefits are enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to say about the cell phones, you know, kids really like to take body shots and send it to each other. One, that's porno. And two, you just opened the door for one of your buddies to sell it on the internet.
Yeah,
you never know where that's going to show up. Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah,
so be careful what you put out there. And also know that your boyfriend may have a hidden camera.
Yeah.
And he may be recording everything we're doing. And now he's selling it on the internet. And you're afraid to say anything because he's going to tell your parents. He's going to tell your friends. He's going to tell everybody what a rotten person you are.
And it's probably not as equally balanced, but the reverse is true, too. I mean, there, young lady can be just as deceptive as a young man can. Mm-hmm. We just automatically think, even I do it, I think, well, the guy, you got to watch out for the guy. But
no, and the school district has had situations they've had to deal with. We've been involved in some of those situations where, it was a sexting situation, and we've seen, both genders be the predator in this case. And it's gone from a sexting issue to a trafficking issue because now there's an exchange for money, or there's, blackmailing, you're going to do this for me because, I just saw it a couple of years ago within the school district here where there was a blackmailing issue, and, eventually the school district, was aware of what was going on, and it was a mess. But, that's a whole other thing. We're also working with the school district on to get more sexting awareness. We're seeing that as young as fourth grade within our community, that kind of stuff going on.
And again, when it even gets to teenagers, these kids think, well, I'm going to be with this person forever. This person's going to love me.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily work out that way.
Right.
We had an instance in a school in North Carolina where I came from where a young lady was getting all the boys to send her pictures. And then she would use that against them to get what she wanted.
Yeah.
And
well, and the kids, as versed as they are in technology, there's a lot of things they don't know about technology. And, a lot of these apps that they're using and taking these pictures with are owned by companies outside the country.
And they're not secure.
And they say, oh, it disappears after I hit delete. No, it never goes away. One of the things I tell kids, I said, go drive down outside the Dells. And you'll see the information farms there. Every time you hit, punch a keypad, a button on a phone, it's recorded, physically recorded somewhere. And that's why all these information farms are popping up and getting bigger and bigger. That's the biggest information or the most important information I can get to students when I do these presentations in our school district is that there's no such thing as delete. It's recorded somewhere.
That's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Good thing to know. Thank you both for stopping in today. I really appreciate it. Is there any other?
I would just like to say that Oregon ranks number 10 in human trafficking of some kind in the nation.
Wow. That's high. Too
number
high.
10.
Yeah, too high. Yeah.
Way too high.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for, being part of an organization that, helps identify this and helps bring it to light because, I never would have thought that it was that big of a deal here in our community. So,
yeah.
And just remember, any race, any age group, any gender identity out there are all susceptible.
And anybody that's in the middle of this hearing this, there's help. We're available 24/7. We're very good at what we do, and we're here for you.
And even if you go to the police, all you have to do is ask for an advocate. They will not ask you any more questions. You will not be forced to do anything. And we will be given a confidential place to be in. We will discuss the issue, and we will get you safe. We have relocated people out of the area within 1 hour.
Well, if we even help one person with this, it's worth it. Marie
Absolutely.
Hickman, Bob Teeter, Safe Outreach Services, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Superintendent of Safe Schools, Andy Grizz, COEX, coming up next.